Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. And let me firstly thank the organizers for inviting me here for this, I think, very timely and very important conference. Let me also say that I very much enjoyed and the presentation of Tatiana, and I would also agree with many points by her. What I would do is also to come back to some of her argumentation, and particularly by pointing out where I slightly disagree, or where I am trying to outline what the European interests are in respect, for example, to the diversification problem, which you have mentioned, which is difficult to understand it from the Russian side. Firstly, I think it's also necessary to make the point that the discussion started actually to some extent before 2006, and many of the changes you have pinpointed of the last 2 years, where the overall conditions on both sides have to a certain extent changed, including the political discussion. But some of those discussion, I think, started earlier. The gas problem on the European side is certainly different from other resources on the EU side. But in general, I think we face a dramatic increase of the import dependency in respect also to oil, in respect even to coal, and of course also in respect to natural gas. So given the import demand originally, it was perceived on the EU side it will rise from 57% to 84% up to the year 2030. Today, approximately, the EU depends on 41 or a little bit more on 40% of imports from Russia, and almost 30% from Algeria. There are different statistics. You can get sometimes different figures of the import share, but I think that's more or less the picture. The other important point you have referred is, of course, the demand side, which has very much changed over the years, and there are still debates ongoing what the actual EU demand will be in the years ahead. On a global scale, I think one should mention there is not just a renaissance of nuclear power, but also of coal over the last 2 years. So the overall demand in respect to gas vis-a-vis coal has changed if you look to the IEA figures and others. And that, of course, has to do with the very, very high oil and gas prices vis-a-vis coal. Also the coal prices increase, but the gap in between is rising. And so from an economic point of view, for many EU member states, I think, regardless of the climate discussion, coal is very often domestic source. So it reduces the import dependency, and it is much cheaper. Particularly for the base load. Even in Germany, I think most of the industry, of the energy industries, can't imagine that Germany would replace coal by gas for the base load, for example. It would be simply impossible in respect to the prices we face. And there's a discussion even in the so-called rich Germany on the present high energy prices, not to speak about countries who suffer much more economically from these extremely high prices. So we have an overall global situation where the natural gas demand is decreasing in all kind of regions and the rest of the world, and so it is also on the EU side. The other problem on the EU side is in respect to diversification. Our imports of natural gas are much, much less diversified. In respect to imports of coal, also the dependency in Russia has increased over the year, approximately 33% of all oil imports are coming from Russia today, but the rest is much, much more diversified. In respect to natural gas, it's completely different. We have basically relying just on three exporters, which is the Russian Federation. If you take the share of natural gas imports, it's even going up during the last year, up to 46% of all gas we import coming from Russia. Then we have Algeria with approximately 20% and Norway 27%, and the rest is just 7% from other countries. So if you look to the global debate of about energy security, I think all kind of energy expert would pinpoint to that kind of situation where the diversification in respect to natural gas is extremely unsatisfying vis-a-vis our energy security. And that has, at the first glance, nothing to do with Russia itself. It's just that we are diversified not in the same way like in respect to our oil imports. And all kind of international expert would highlight that is very destabilizing. I think diversification, by the way, in contrast to the German discussion where we often discuss diversification just in relation to imports, diversification on a global scale where international expert would argue begins with the energy mix. Yeah, the smaller you make the energy mix and cut off specific energy sources such as nuclear power, the more you're dependent on the remaining ones. And the hope on the German side by many, or by in some political circles, was to replace nuclear power by firstly increasing energy efficiency and secondly by expanding renewables. Most of the industry and most of the energy expert are extremely skeptical that this is realistic strategy, at least not in for the midterm perspective. So the result of cutting off nuclear power in Germany is a higher increase of gas. And that is running totally against, I think, our energy security in general. And that's even not understandable, I think, in the view of many of the Russian experts. So they would recommend to us this is not a viable way. And well, the rest of the EU has already taken a different stance. If you take countries such as Sweden, Great Britain, Italy, and others, which have also cutting off nuclear power originally, have returned that decision either by extending the lifetimes of nuclear power, or in Great Britain, Italy, which are even thinking they should build new ones. So in many ways, and that is reflected in the EU discussion of the March decisions last year, Germany has really isolated in itself in this respect. And now we have even a discussion in respect to coal, where we would even maybe give up the entire coal production, no investment in, as well as it's here again we isolating ourselves. And I had a lot of talks sometimes even with ministers over the last months of neighboring countries, also in the EU, in Brussels, and there's hardly any understanding at all about Germany, because we are, of course, also exporting electricity, we're importing electricity. So whatever we do, given our geographical position in the heart of Europe, affects the energy policy of the rest of the EU. And so everybody is looking on us, what we are doing, whether it's Nord Stream, whether it's cutting off nuclear power, whether it's the coal decision. It affects the entire EU energy policy. And there's a lot of concern. And I just was 3 weeks ago in Brussels on a EU-Russian conference, also with high representatives of Russia, like Mr. Chubais. And so there's a real discussion ongoing about the reliability of the future German energy as well as foreign policies. And that is not just a concern here in Poland or in the Baltic states. I think many other countries surrounding Germany have the same question in this respect. So, and the third reason why natural gas is a very sensitive issue, or much more sensitive than oil, is, of course, particularly the new EU member states are dependent on Russian gas imports up to 100%. Here again, that's not something which I think is very promising or seen as really stabilizing energy supply security. So I think there should be also understanding on the Russian side that these countries would diversify their natural gas imports and not just rely on one country. And by the way, many of the argumentation on the Russian side, also as in my view, one of those threats being voiced by Mr. Putin and others, if the EU is not cooperating as the Russians would like to see it, then we can turn to China and Asia. I think in many ways it's not credible, at least not in respect to the present gas fields we are dependent on, because they are depleting, as you have said. Geographically, they are much more closer to Europe, and they are already, you have a pipeline infrastructure which you don't have in Asia. On the other hand, the new fields are partly in Sakhalin and in East Siberia, so there should be understanding on the German side too. Firstly, that Russia has also as a producer state and a strategic interest to diversify its exports, because that is stabilizing its export policy as well as its energy security. And if that is stabilizing Russia, I think that's stabilizing also the global situation. So diversification of imports as well as of exports is something which is stabilizing global energy security. And therefore, I think Russia should have an understanding that the EU, particularly those countries which are totally dependent on Russia, will diversify. As we should have an understanding that Russia is diversifying its gas exports, and be it just for geographical reasons. So, therefore, I think this debate doesn't seems not very very prudent to continue. So I think there should be an understanding on both sides. Coming more to the Russian situation. I think if I take the figure 2005, the total energy consumption in Russia, natural gas is covering 55%, which is of course, in contrast to the EU member states, a lot. And on the other hand, it has the largest reserve, it's the largest producer, therefore that's also understandable. But looking ahead to the increase of production, I think if you look to the official production increased figures offered by Gazprom or the Energy Ministry, the forecast of production is just 1 to 2% per year up to 2020. 2007, you have a total production of 548 billion cubic meters. At the same time, you have newly discovered reserve of 585. 2008, the production is expected to increase by 4.2 billion cubic meters. 2010, it should continue to expand to 570. And 2020 up to 650-670 billion cubic meters. At that time, 2020, officially, the new fields will account or should account for nearly half of all gas being produced, which is referring what you have said, that the older fields are depleting. Valery Milov and other experts have pointed out that the Russian gas crisis is emerging, referring to the decline in the older fields, particularly in the region of Nadym-Purotas, and an unwillingness on the part of the state energy giant Gazprom to make timely investments in developing new fields in Russia itself. You have pointed out to some of the reasons and the difficulties on the side of Gazprom. That's understandable, but I think this kind of unwillingness we see on the side of Gazprom goes back to the first years of Mr. Putin. There's almost no real increase in the production since the beginning of 2001. So we have from that time, which started long before 2006, a failing investment in the exploration of new gas field, with a deficit of gas supplies expected to Russia as well as to Europe, which can go up to 100 billion cubic meters, and I will refer in a minute to some of those Russian comments and analysis. Already today, you can argue that Russia is increasingly dependent on gas imports from Central Asia, which was the alternative strategy instead of the own investment in their own fields, up to almost 80 billion cubic meters in order to satisfy domestic gas consumption and maintaining high price exports to Europe. In many ways, you can argue that already one third of the imports we get from Russia is actually coming from Central Asia through a swap deal. So economically, it makes perfectly sense for Russia for importing much cheaper gas and selling it for much, much higher prices. And you can, of course, also argue that a monopolist company like Gazprom has a strategic interest to monopolize those exports into the future. But I think that's not in the interest of the EU. That's also, I think, not in the interest of the regional states of Central Asia. And if you look to the oil and gas policies of Turkmenistan, I think it's quite clear that it's rather following meanwhile a policy adopted by Kazakhstan of diversifying its exports as much as possible and of reducing its dependency on Russia. I think symptomatically a few days ago, Mr. Miller has not been welcomed by the Turkmen president, and which was seen as very, very unusual. And I think here you can see, I think there are certainly problems also in the political economic relationship. If you're looking to the older figures, and we have relied many years up to the year 2006, of course many experts on our side have relied on the Russian energy strategy, the official one of 2003. And at that time, the EU gas demand projected in the year 2030 was 490 billion cubic meters, with declining the own production. If you look to the forecast of the EU demand, partly being analyzed before 2006, partly afterwards, and you have referred in one of your slides to these projections. They have varied between 50 and 300 billion cubic additional cubic meters of gas we need on the EU side. And most of the figures of the IEA is still relying, interestingly, on these old projections without taking the March decision into account, which is surprising because the March decision is saying that the overall energy demand on the EU side will be reduced by 20% by increasing efficiency conservation, and 20% should come from the renewables. If you take some independent new analysis which came to the conclusion by taking these figures into account that the overall EU demand will be certainly much less than 300 billion cubic meters. It's difficult to project because that depends on the situation, like in Germany, what we do with coal, like in other countries too, but I think it will be certainly much less. My own projection would be something in between 100 and 200 billion cubic meters. And if you take the price factor into account, and then I think you have the impact you have projected in your analysis, it will even go down more. And so I think we are in a situation on the EU side which is today, in contrast to 2-3 years ago, much more difficult, much more uncertain what the EU gas demand or the overall energy demand will be in the next 10 to 20 years. Also, we have very often underestimated technological innovation. And therefore, I think we have to become extremely difficult how the energy and gas demand will be in 10, 20 years, and how the energy mix will look like. And that is complicating the debate on the long-term contracts. On one hand, you have perfectly argued with rising costs of exploration and production, you need even more certainty for the investment, therefore you need long-term contracts. But on the other side, the energy debate and developments and the energy mix and the energy demand side is so fluid, the debate, that nobody can project it, etc. And so there is a risk on our side if we conclude a lot of new long-term contracts, whether it's with Russia or with someone else. We are contracted and dependent on contracts where we don't need that kind of amount of gas in 20 years on. So, and that is a huge problem for our industry as well. Also, of course, gas industry is certainly been interested to preserve its share of the overall energy mix, and would also, to some extent, create certain kind of facts, which are difficult then to change. But in general, I think even on the industry side, there are also a lot of uncertainties, even for companies like E.ON, which has not just E.ON Ruhrgas, but is, has all kind of other energy resources and plants. So a lot of uncertainties how the energy mix and demand side will look like in 10, 20 years. On the Russian side, I think on one hand, Gazprom has been extremely successful, and that is, you can of course read it in its newsletters, and there's no doubt about that. But on the other hand, we should also not overlook that Gazprom in many ways is facing a crisis. It has an external debt raising to $36 billion US dollars. In the first half of 2007, its profit dropped by 25%. If you look to the investment program, which has been revised several times in 2007, the share of investments shrunk where acquisitions expanded. Its investment plan of 2008 is saying there are plans to invest $20.4 billion, which is more than in the past years, in production as well as in transportation. But here again, you see in the production is just $8.7 billion. And the overall impression is that it's still very conservative, and this is not something which will be, which will really compensate for the massive underinvestment since the beginning of the Putin era. So that will not change the overall picture in the next years. And there is, even by, if you take the plans to increase the Russian gas prices domestically, I think if you look to the international market price, I think the gap will still be wider and still increasing between domestic and export prices in the years ahead. I think neither Russia can increase its domestic gas prices to the same level as the EU countries. That's not, for domestic reason, it's not, and for economic reason, it's not possible. It is also facing a drastic price increase for Central Asian import gas. Also, there's still a huge difference to what the EU is paying. Actually, it's 410 US dollars for 1,000 billion cubic meters. But it's clear that also for the next year at latest, the Central Asian states, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, which have built a kind of coalition also vis-a-vis Russia recently in this price debate, will certainly raise the price even more. And then that ongoing kind of a race on, or the increase of prices on both sides. Russia is also facing and has faced during the last years, particularly during winter times, also drastic limitations for its own consumers in various regions. Krasnodar is one of them, even during the last winter, which was rather warm. And the overall impression also from the domestic debates is, and I had a chance to talk with Mr. Chubais 3 weeks ago, when Mr. Putin was introducing the alternative plan in the discussion of September 2006, by I think facing a situation where Russia is facing indeed a gas crisis, he came up with an alternative plan by expanding coal and nuclear power. And reportedly in the Russian press there was a heated debate inside the government itself, where the more liberal reformers were arguing, well, that plan is not realistic at all. Building 40 new nuclear powers, well, if you're optimistic and they will be built, it will take 8-10 years. Expanding coal, you can do it, but logistically to provide the rest, the entire Russian Federation with coal by replacing gas consumption, that will provide insurmountable problems of the logistics. And those plans will not be realized before 2015, 2018. So the gas crisis is emerging much, much earlier. And here again, that has been confirmed. This is not a speculation. It had been confirmed by Mr. Putin in September 2006 by the alternative plan, but not revealing its full scope or bring transparency to the issue. And that's a concern on the EU side. Take other examples of those announcements. On June 19, 2007, the deputy CEO of Gazprom, Alexander Ananenkov, indicated that the gas agreement with Russia of 2006 by delivering 80 billion cubic meters to China annually could be given up because Russia needs the gas for its own domestic markets as well as for maintaining its gas exports to Europe. August 2, 2007, the Russian government demanded from the Sakhalin 2 consortium to sell all gas to Gazprom and not directly to China, Japan, and other markets, because, and that was the justification, because of its increasing domestic gas consumption. November 2007, reportedly the Russian Ministry for Economic Development and Trade itself was warning that a gas deficit is emerging in 2010. So the year mentioned by Valentin Milov himself and now being confirmed by the Russian Ministry, which could constrain the domestic gas market. April 2, 2008, Deputy Natural Resources Minister Alexei Varlamov, Russia is on the verge of exhausting all mineral resources in 10, 15 years. Some of the reserves in respect to oil or uranium is even more alarming. Gas reserves, he cited the year 2025, if no investment will be taken. So I think it's a fact that Russia is facing some kind of a Russian gas crisis in many ways. It's only the question to which extent. Secondly, there was much hope on Russia's independent gas suppliers on the side of the EU, the IEA, etc. And indeed, if you look to the increase of share of the independent gas suppliers of the total Russian gas production, which should increase from 11% in 2007 to 17% by 2010, the IEA hopes up to the year 2015. Originally, it will account even 40% of the market, meaning deliveries up to 260, 290 billion cubic meters of natural gas. I think that has been also decreased meanwhile in many of the analysis. Actually, Novatek and TNK BP are probably the only companies capable of making a substantial contributions. But the reserve levels and available capital are already placing limits on gas-producing oil companies like Rosneft, which are also being lured by the prospect of greater profits in the oil business. So the more conservative approach in 2003 and the 2003 natural energy strategy of Russia, which envisions a contribution up to 120, 135 billion cubic meters by the independents, seems more realistic. Furthermore, the amount of gas contributed by these independent players will depend on the capital resources, as well as, and that's here again, I think, uncertain, on formal guarantees by Gazprom that they will be able to utilize its network. Furthermore, in the future, they are likely to face even greater restriction in accessing Gazprom's network for a variety of reasons. Furthermore, how really independent they are. Firstly, Gazprom has shares of Novatek itself. There are speculation whether Gazprom will not overtake some of those independents given its own problems. And they have, even as independents, sell their gas to Gazprom for exports, but given Gazprom's exports monopoly. Furthermore, they have to act in respect of the Kremlin's declared strategic and geopolitical interests inside Russia and beyond. And therefore, I think on our side, the ownership of those companies does not equal with real independence what we would define as independent. Here again, with other words, there are uncertainties, and for reasons of time, I will not go too much in this discussion of the diversification plans on the EU side with the various pipelines, and which is often overlooked sometimes on the Russian side, also in respect to the LNG terminals. If you're optimistic that that the EU will be able, or the companies will be able, to contract the LNG, which is uncertain, but if you take the LNG projects all together, and various pipeline plans from North Africa to Spain to Italy, then these new projects have a combined addition of more than 100 billion cubic meters of non-Russian gas coming to Europe. So there's a diversification in many ways underway. On the other hand, the EU itself perceives the recent activities on the Gazprom and Kremlin side by buying shares in North Africa as something of an encirclement strategy by Russia, which is seen with wide, with a lot of concerns, I have to say, which is something which some of your Russian colleagues have admitted himself that the Kremlin and Gazprom are following here an encirclement strategy of the EU, which makes the diversification much more uncertain on our side. And that would certainly create more problems, I think, in those debates, besides the economic problems and the uncertainties of the wider conditions of the international markets, investments, demand sides, et cetera. And I stop here because that goes directly into discussion, in the next discussion, I think.